Could they overwhelm you with pressure?
Should they score?
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We can put the Crosby score.
Give them 20 minutes of room where they can make you bleed for it, and we did.
He doesn't sign with Winnipeg Jets in the next couple of weeks. No player will be more coveted.
Dustin Byfuglien posts it in. It's a rocket of a shot.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Charlie Coyle comes, he put the puck back out in front, and a shot, they score! Jason Pominville with his second of the evening here, and it's 3-0 Minnesota.
The Jets staged a comeback, attempted to stage a comeback. They fall short last night at home to Minnesota Wild, their second straight defeat versus Central Division opponents after the loss on Saturday afternoon to the Colorado Avalanche. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening at tsn1290.ca, we wish you a good evening to the universe and welcome to NHL This Week. Drew Mundell, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you in studio here at TSN 1290 Radio Headquarters. We got 2 hours of hockey talk for you. Lots on the Jets. We'll also be joined by Josh Cooper of Yahoo Sports and Kristen Odland of the Calgary Herald to discuss the Flames. You can reach us here in studio at Illegal Curve. Facebook.com/IllegalCurve is our Facebook page. And, of course, our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. You just heard the end of the Moose game. Of course, Mitch Peacock with the call. The Moose falling in Grand Rapids to the Griffins as they continue their road trip. Gentlemen, I say good evening to you, Ezzy. Good evening to you, Sean. Nice to see you both on this Wednesday evening.
Yeah, what's going on, guys? Former Jet Eric Tangrady picked up a goal for the Grand Rapids Griffins. That's a name we haven't heard that much in the last couple of years. He only played I think 1.5 years with the Winnipeg Jets, but unfortunately the Moose.
You certainly didn't hear his name talked about and the word goal scoring very much either with Eric Tangrady. Maybe it should have been a sign when he couldn't play with Crosby. Maybe that was a sign, you know, he wasn't going to really materialize into much in terms of an NHL player.
Yeah, I'm sure, Drew, if you played left wing on a line with Sidney Crosby, you'd probably put in 20 goals or 25 goals.
Leech off of me is what would happen in that sense, you know. Never mind, the guy's on the verge of getting his 1,000th point and be the third fastest to reach 1,000 points when you adjust it for eras. And, of course, we'll talk about that later on in the program. But, yeah, Eric Tangrady getting the goal for the Grand Rapids Griffins as they defeat the Moose. And, Sean, last night for the Jets, a disappointing outcome against the Minnesota Wild. They're looking to bounce back after the loss on Saturday, the Colorado Avalanche. And I was surprised when in the post-game analysis, a lot of what I would describe as people taking moral victories out of that game last night. Oh, they played really well against the Minnesota Wild. I don't know. They were down 3-0. Everything that happens after that, from my perspective, is window dressing for the most part. Your thoughts on last night's Jets loss to the Minnesota Wild at MTS Center?
I'm not going to look at it as that perspective. I'm going to say that they played a good game against a very, very good Minnesota Wild team. I think we saw firsthand last night as to why the Wild are the cream of the crop around the NHL. They are a fast team. They support the puck extremely well. Their forecheck is as tenacious as it comes. And then we saw again firsthand why Devan Dubnyk has had the success that he's had. That guy is a monster in net. And the Jets staged a bit of a comeback. Like you said, Drew, they scored twice. They had their opportunities for that third goal, a couple swept off the goal line, and Devan Dubnyk showed some real nice awareness when that puck was behind him in between his legs. He kind of did the crab claw on it, closed the door, and we really saw why Devan Dubnyk is a top-notch goaltender around the league last night.
Well, you really did the goaltending story. If you just look at that in the vacuum, the goaltending story last night really tells the tale of the two teams. Mm-hmm. Winnipeg Jets on the outside of the playoffs looking in, their chances diminishing by the day as they've lost these two in a row, while St. Louis has won two straight. And then you look at the Minnesota, and of course the Jets not getting poor goaltending at best for the majority of the season. And then you look at the Minnesota Wild being backed up by Devan Dubnyk, who has clearly turned into one of the top five netminders in the entire NHL. And now you look at the Wild and where they are. Well, they're clearly a top, you know, one of the best teams in the Central Division, playing tonight against the Chicago Blackhawks in the second half of a back-to-back. Ezzy, you know, let's start with your perspective on the Jets game last night against the Wild. I also want you to touch on the decision that Paul Maurice made in starting Andre Pavlik last night after his poor performance against the Colorado Avalanche on Saturday. Were you surprised? Obviously, Pavlik started the game. He didn't finish it as he left with that lower body injury. Were you surprised that Andre Pavlik got the start even before the game started last night against the Wild?
No, Drew, I wasn't surprised that Andre Pavlik got the start. I was a little bit surprised, actually, that we didn't see Connor Hellebuck go into the net before Andre Pavlik went down with an injury. And we're going to play the audio here in a couple of minutes. Paul Maurice today talking about the decision to put Patrick Laine on the fourth line and leave him there. I thought it was very interesting, not only what Paul Maurice said about Laine, but kind of talking about how the media has reacted to that. But, you know, to Sean's point, I realize, Drew, at this point in the season, we're 56 games into the season. Moral victories mean absolutely nothing. I mean, you're chasing the St. Louis Blues, you're chasing the Calgary Flames, you're battling with the Dallas Stars for that last wild card spot. Right now, the Jets need points, but I actually thought the Jets played really well. And, you know, it was kind of one of those weird games. You mentioned, I agree with you, Drew, the Wild were up 3-0. So when you're down 3-0, really, how well can you be playing? But
the old score effects argument that comes into play when it becomes a 3-2 game at that point.
Right. But the second period, I mean, the Jets badly outshot the Minnesota Wild. Devan Dubnyk was really good. And after two periods, the Jets were only down by one goal. But you look at the three goals that the Wild scored. Niederreiter, it was a beautiful shot, kind of a little bit of a toe drag there. And you can't really fault Andre Pavlik there. And on the second goal, that's obviously when Patrick Laine is demoted to the fourth line.
He turns the puck over.
He turns the puck over to Charlie Coyle, who had an excellent game. And I agree with Sean. This is a very fast Wild team, maybe a top three speed team in the entire league. But he turns over the puck to Charlie Coyle. And then what I think bothered Paul Maurice the most is if you watch the replay, Patrick Laine doesn't really put in a good effort to stop Charlie Coyle in entering the zone. He gets it over to Jason Pominville. Should Andre Pavlik have stopped that? Probably. I think it might have been tipped by Tobias Enstrom's stick, by the way. But regardless, that was probably the weakest of the three goals. And then you look at the third goal that was scored early in the second period. Josh Morrissey's a little bit out of position. Jason Pominville's completely wide open. Charlie Coyle makes a really nice pass. So I thought that the defensive zone coverage, again, we're talking about the D-zone coverage, wasn't very good for the Winnipeg Jets, giving the Wild too much time and space. But as far as Patrick Laine goes, I agree with Gary Lawless, and I hate to say it because I don't always agree with the lawman. But as far as I'm concerned, Laine should have been on the fourth line for one period. Then you bring him back up to the first period because when you need a goal, the first line, because when you need a goal and you really need those 2 points against a divisional opponent, I don't think Laine is well-served playing on the fourth line. You need him out there. You need him contributing. So I was really surprised that Maurice decided to not only put Laine on the fourth line, but keep him there.
Only three shifts for Patrick Laine in the second period. Gets, I think, seven shifts in the third period as the game was closer and the Jets were pressing to get the equalizer at that point in time. It goes back to me, you know, it reminds me of the old Wayne Gretzky, at least the quote that was attributed to Wayne Gretzky when Robbie Fatorik benched him. And you know, Robbie Fatorik benched him to prove a point about composure, you know, because Wayne Gretzky had, quote-unquote, lost his composure after a bad turnover, and he was upset, and he slammed his stick against the crossbar, and he broke his stick, and Robbie Fatorik benched him to prove a point and show about composure. And it was Gretzky who said to him, look, if you're trying to teach a lesson, go teach in the AHL. We're here in the NHL to win the Stanley Cup. And so I think that, yeah, you can bench a guy, you know, for a couple shifts. When is your best goal scorer? You are out of the playoffs. It's game 56. This isn't game 22. You need as many wins and you need as many points. You can't afford to keep your best player on the bench, from my perspective.
Also on home ice, where Patrick Laine does a lot of his damage.
Sure. You can't leave a guy on the bench, really. Take him out of... You're holstering a weapon of yours for really half the game. And I don't agree with that decision by Coach Maurice yesterday. I thought that was the wrong decision. And we'll play Paul Maurice's comments in 1 second. I asked you about the decision to start Andre Pavlik, and you said you weren't surprised yesterday that he got the start.
No, and I wasn't, Drew, because he had played, I thought, okay in the previous game, and I realized that the Jets lost that game.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about Connor Hellebuyck right now, he's obviously going to get the start against Chicago. I don't think anybody's going to disagree with that, and it's not just because Andre Pavlik's injured. I think if Pavlik was healthy, he'd start. And that's because he has 4 wins against the Blackhawks this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to get him back into starting games. So I think Connor Hellebuyck is going to start on Friday against the Blackhawks. But, I mean, let's be honest here.
Well, that's
Paul Maurice has decided to go with Andre Pavlik.
It's an
That might change now, Drew.
And, well, it's going to have to because, I mean, Pavlik, we don't obviously know his injury status, but he's, you know, when you pull yourself out of the game, obviously he had a lower body injury. It's probably something that's going to take at least a couple games to heal with. So they're going to have to go with Connor Hellebuyck. I was an advocate for when they called up Andre Pavlik. Maybe not an advocate. I said they have to do it.
I'll give you credit. You called it 3 or 4 days before it happened.
Because
I didn't think they were, and you were right. So, I mean, I got to give you credit for that.
I appreciate that. They had to call him up.
Because, I hate to do that, too.
Because Hellebuyck and Hutchinson, they were just a complete mess at that point in time. But to go with Pavlik so many games in a row, especially after Hellebuyck came back, had that victory against the Chicago Blackhawks right before the All-Star break. To be perfectly honest, I thought that Hellebuyck was going to get the start right after the All-Star break in St. Louis. When they went with Pavlik there, I was surprised.
Yep.
When they went with Pavlik in Dallas, again, I was surprised.
Pavlik was very good in Dallas.
He was very good in Dallas. When they went to Pavlik in Colorado, I was surprised. And then when they went to Pavlik against the Wild after the debacle that was Saturday afternoon against Colorado, I was not just surprised anymore. I was stunned at that decision. And I just don't understand really the mindset and the logic behind going with Andre Pavlik and leaving Connor Hellebuyck on the bench for, it'll be over 2 weeks since his last start when he starts Friday against the Chicago Blackhawks.
And I can agree with you in the sense that I was a little bit surprised that Connor Hellebuyck didn't get that first start, and I told you that
mm-hmm.
when we were on air, but I don't think you're going to be stunned anymore, Drew, because I think this Pavlik injury is not only going to force the Jets to start Hellebuyck, but I think the Jets were probably going to go back to Hellebuyck anyways, because Pavlik just isn't playing as well as he was in the first 3 or 4 games when they called him up, so.
Yeah, I think it's the question I think will be interesting is do they go with Hellebuyck both Friday and Saturday if they need to in the back-to-back situation against the Blackhawks and the Lightning? Tell you what, let's go to break. When we come back, I want to play Paul Maurice's comments from today because I thought they were interesting. I saw a lot of praise for him because of his, you know, his relaxed demeanor. I don't know if I necessarily am going to take the same attitude towards his comments. We'll come back. We'll play Paul Maurice from earlier today. We'll talk about the Tyler Myers injury. Much more to come. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to NHL This Week, Wednesday evening, 9:15 here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. As promised before the break, I want to come back. I want to play Paul Maurice's press conference, a portion of it, of the scrum after practice today down at MTS Center. So here's Paul Maurice addressing a number of the issues from last night's Jets Wild game. This is Paul Maurice from earlier today.
Take us back to last night. Everybody in the city is talking about Patrick Schiff's being limited and just kind of your process from then to kind of where you sit as the coach with him today.
Pat's been sent down to the minors today. He's been returned to the Moose. So this is where I would rely on your experience and your veteranness of the room. I played, 13 minutes? It's the same amount of time as the two guys who had scored all 4 of their goals. If you want to write an article on me that I can't defend, you can say I've coddled the kids. You could probably write a legitimate article on that. But he had a rougher night. That's going to happen. Still love him. Going to play him again. That's where I'm at today.
What do you mean by that? Are you being sarcastic, or is that about coddling the kids?
No, I am. If you're going to write an article about how I've handled these kids, you could write a legitimate article that every time they made a mistake, I put them back on the ice. That you could write an article. The toe drag on Dallas 5-on-3 to the breakaway, back on the ice. For both of them. You can do it for Mark Scheifele, too, and Adam Lowry, too, and Jake Trouba, any of the kids that are 22 or 23 or younger, that none of them have suffered a benching because they made a mistake.
And why is that, Paul?
Because they need to learn and they need to play, in my opinion. So I've handled them that way. That, and they're better than a lot of the other options that I have anyway. So we put them back out there. They play big minutes here. I don't know if Patty's number one in the rookies. If he's not, he's off by seconds, and he's played big minutes. He's on the ice at the end of the game. So I see a whole different level of development in Patty. There's going to come a point in time where he doesn't score a bunch of goals and you're all going to be in a panic about where his game's at. But from the start of the year to now, he's miles better player. Nick Ehlers as well. Like, from the start of last year to where Nick Ehlers is today, it's night and day. So of Mark Scheifele. It's true of Jake Trouba. It's true of Adam Lowry. In a short period of time, I'd like to say it's true about Josh Morrissey, except he's been damn good right from the start. Right? So it goes draft, develop, dominate, hopefully at some point. But you're not missing that middle part. So I play him. And I always remember the late Pat Burns trying to explain why Joe Thornton was on the fourth line and people were killing him because he was playing 6 minutes. I've taken a different tack with the kid. But I will tell you that Patty Liney's game is miles, miles better today. Last night, it was miles better than the games he played in the first 20 of the season. I love the guy. And I also know what he's going to mean to this franchise. So if I shaved 3 minutes off his game, I apologize to Manitoba.
Paul Maurice earlier today at MTS Center addressing the decision to sit down Patrick Laine for a lot of the game yesterday against the Minnesota Wild, particularly after the turnover that led to the Wild's second goal.
Wow.
You know what? A lot of people, oh, he's so honest and he's being very forthcoming. You know, and I suppose he was honest in his comments. There was a little too much arrogance there for my liking.
I can see why you're saying that, Drew. For me, he doesn't really answer the question, though. I mean, he was asked specifically about Patrick Laine, and that's what everybody here in Winnipeg is talking about, right, guys?
Sure.
Patrick Laine is the future star, if not current star, of this franchise.
Mm-hmm.
He's got two less goals than Austin Matthews. He's one of the top rookies, if not the top rookie in the NHL. I don't want to get that debate going, but needless to say, he's a generational player, drafted second overall. And when he's on the fourth line, yes, it is going to be written about and talked about by fans. So when he starts talking about, you know, he put Patrick Laine out there after he toe-dragged in Dallas and all of that, I mean, we're not talking about that. We're talking about last night mm-hmm. in a game against a very good Wild team, the best team in the Western Conference right now. Why did you decide to sit him for the majority of the third period? What did he have, three shifts, Drew?
Three shifts in the second period, right. I believe, seven right. in the third period.
On that fourth line. So,
at some point in time, he got more ice time without without Patan and Stafford.
Right. But for the most part, he was on the fourth line. So
yeah.
It's kind of interesting, and you can tell that not only is Paul Maurice defensive there, Sean, you can kind of see he's beating the media a little bit there, and kind of Gary even asks Paul there, he says, well, are you being sarcastic when you say that you're coddling the kids, right? And then he lumps in Nikolai Ehlers in there, and then he throws Scheifele in there, who's now in his fourth year in the NHL. So I don't know if you can call Scheifele a kid anymore. He's an associate captain. So it's very interesting, Paul Maurice's answer. And we've seen that before. Paul Maurice spins his answers. But I don't think this is a big deal, guys. But when you look at that game, and sure, is that a teachable moment? Absolutely. But when you look back on that game, like I said, you're going to say, well, what if line A was actually out there on the line that he should have been out there? Could the Jets have tied that game up? And the Jets had tons of good chances. What did they put, 40 shots on Devin Dubnyk? So, again, we're probably not going to be talking about this a week from now. So maybe that's why Paul Maurice doesn't want to answer the question directly. But he definitely has shown this year, in my opinion, that he's not afraid and he's getting a little bit testy with the media.
I really didn't like the last little jab at the end of the interview, apologizing to the province of Manitoba. You know, the whole thing. Look, you're the head coach of a team that has never won a playoff game. You are 6 games under 500 this year. You've won 25 out of 56 games. You didn't make the playoffs last year. Not all your fault as the head coach. A lot of that blame lands on the doorstep of the general manager, and the general manager's failings should be fair game as well. And sure, you don't hear from the general manager after each and every game. I thought, look, you if he makes his argument about why he with the decision he made for about Patrick Laine, say, look, the guy made a turnover.
Right.
I needed him to learn a lesson from it. I thought this was the best way to go about it. I don't need you to try and spin me there. There's no spinning involved.
And, Sean, we know that Paul Maurice has Patrick Laine's back, but his answer doesn't really tell you what we know. I mean, let's be honest. He put Patrick Laine on the fourth line because he coughed up the puck to Charlie Coyle, and it cost the Jets a goal. It put the Wild up 2-0, so he was teaching him a lesson.
End of story. Just say that. Don't try and make it spin it into some big fable and some big parable about when Joe Thornton was playing on the fourth line and what the late Pat Byrne said to you.
Who cares about that?
I it doesn't make any sense. Just say, look, I needed to teach him. I needed this to be a learning opportunity for a young player who's going to be a superstar in this league, and so I took advantage of that opportunity. Done. No, apologize to the province of Manitoba. That was arrogant. Arrogant nonsense that from a coach who right now should not be doing anything that reeks of arrogance.
Yeah, I mean, it's the play alone, it's a mistake, and you think Laine is halfway through his first season, maybe use better judgment, you know, get a deep, skate a couple more strides, get a deep, as opposed to try to force a puck through the middle to Nick Petan. But Paul Maurice also touched later on in that press conference about not, I don't want to say sheltering that line, but he didn't like the matchup that the Ehlers little Laine line was up against. So he turned the blender into a Vitamix and he just blended everything up. Defense pairings, forward, everything got shifted last night. But regardless, yeah, you know, you could say it's a learning experience and there's a reason he's on the fourth line. But he also talks about how he was defensive in the sense that he was protecting that line because if he didn't make a move, it could be tick four, you know, they'd be a -4 as opposed to where they're a -2. And
these are the best players in some of the most talented players you have on your team. The team is not better off with Patrick Laine in a fourth line role. In a situation that is a must-win game, all these games are must-win games because your team has been lousy so far this season.
But what if he does nothing and then that line continues to get scored on?
I mean, they're not rolling over and playing dead. They're not going to get scored on over and over and over again. By the way, we're not talking about this if the goalie makes the save that the goalie should make.
I didn't like the fact that point went in anyways.
Yeah,
like
Andrei Pavlik makes that save, which he should have made, because it wasn't a blatant turnover like the guy, you know, was able to...
It's a 2-on-2.
Yeah, it's a save the goalie's got to make. I just don't understand. I didn't like anything about it. You're on home ice. You need the win. You can sit him down for a couple shifts, maybe a couple shifts at the beginning of the second period. Talk to him in the dressing room, whatever you have to do. I don't know. Sit him for the entire second period. He's your best scorer. It doesn't ring well to me.
And Drew, a week from now, we're going to be completely talking about something else. Trust me, because we do 2 shows a week, and the narrative seems to change on a weekly basis. So,
except for the fact that the goaltending sucks. That's the constant narrative.
Maybe. But when you talk about Patrick Laine, I mean, this is not going to shatter his confidence. We know that Patrick Laine one day is going to score 50 goals in the NHL. I'm certainly confident of that. But when you look at that game in a vacuum, and Lawless went on TV and said it right after, and I agreed with him, it was very curious that Paul Maurice left Patrick Laine on the fourth line. Do it for one period. Okay, he hears you. He shouldn't have turned the puck over. But when you need the points, you need the goals, well, give the guy an opportunity to prove himself.
I'm curious. I mean, I haven't, and admittedly, I don't watch every Toronto Maple Leafs game, but has Austin Matthews not had some turnovers this year? And can you, if this is the blowback in Winnipeg, can you imagine what the situation would be in Toronto if Mike Babcock put Austin Matthews down to the fourth line? Oh, hell, they'd be calling in the National Guard, and they'd be, you know, interrupting television coverage for breaking news for that press conference. So, you know, there's just a lot about this decision that I didn't like. You know, we hear all year long, it's a young man's game, it's a young man's game now, it's a young man's game. Well, then you have to play your young men even when they make errors, not horrendous errors, well, but that, small
well, I
errors.
I agree with you on that. And when you look at which line matched up against Little, Ehlers, and Laine, for most of that first period, if I'm not mistaken, it was the Zucker, Koivu, Granlund line.
And
that's
one of
the best lines in hockey. So yeah. I agree with you, Drew. If you're trying to learn how to be a professional, even though you played 1 year of pro, but he's trying to learn the NHL game, put Laine A right up against Koivu, Zucker, and Granlund. And I realized that the goal was the Coyle, Niederreiter, Pominville line.
Mm-hmm.
But needless to say, Minnesota's got three good scoring lines. So I think you want Laine A out there. And if he has to fail to learn how to be good, keep him out there.
Look, the team doesn't have any better options. And ultimately, the point of this whole thing, it's not the first 10 games of the season where maybe you're okay with that. Like we said, it's game, you know, 56, and you're already out of the playoff spots, and the playoffs and a playoff opportunity is dwindling rapidly. Put your best damn player out on the ice. Put your best damn scorer out on the ice, and prove your points at some other point in time. Not when 15,000 people have paid their hard-earned money to see the Jets play their best players. Let's go to break. Kristen Odlin from the Calgary Herald joins us next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 12.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Wednesday evening here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you in studio. You're listening to NHL This Week. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the program from the Calgary Herald, she covers the Calgary Flames, Kristen Odlin. Kristen, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. I just got back from but it felt like it when you're in New York. But it was a three-game road trip starting in New Jersey and then heading into New York and ending last night in Pittsburgh. So the Flames are on their break now. So it was quite a nice way to head into their break.
Absolutely. So. A shootout victory over the Pittsburgh Penguins yesterday. And as you mentioned, the Flames head into their break. I was going to ask you why you're not going somewhere warm like some of the other players are, but we'll save that for another day, I suppose. You know, right before the All-Star break, this Flames team was struggling. Then they went into Ottawa, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and they had a victory in Ottawa that ended their four-game losing streak. And then since the All-Star break, 4-1 entering into this bye week. Is the bye week maybe coming at a bad time for the Flames, given how well they've been playing as of late? And they were just off for the All-Star break, you know, 2 weeks ago, so they're not desperate for the break at this point.
Yeah, the timing isn't great, but you have to anticipate that. You know, it was a little imperfect, I think, from the NHL's perspective, this whole idea of the five-day mandated break, which has been something that the NHLPA, I think, has been looking forward to or trying to figure out a way to work it into the schedule for a long time. But to have the way the timing worked out, the Flames headed into the All-Star break and then, of course, had a few days off and then started playing again, and then they're off now for another 5 days. Between games. Their next game is Monday against the Arizona Coyotes, but they're going to have to deal with it. It's just, it is what it is at this point. All the teams are going to have to deal with it. They have, it's just the timing is kind of funny because they're playing so well. And I talked to a number of players yesterday, and I talked to head coach Glenn Gulletson last night, and I talked to Craig Conroy about it as well, too. Just getting their take on it. Is the timing not a great thing, just given the way that the Flames are playing, and, you know, given that stretch right before the All-Star break, it was pretty ugly there for a while, a three-game losing streak, and then, you know, they turned it around. So you want to kind of keep that momentum going. I know player-wise, when you're on a roll and you're feeling it, I talked to Garnet Hathaway last night, and he was kind of saying, well, I just got into the lineup. I want to keep it rolling, but what are you going to do? But yeah, you look at the, you know, one of the Flames' top lines, Michael Frolik, Michael Backlund, and Matthew Tkachuk, and they've been really feeling it these past few weeks. And Michael Frolik was saying, you guys know him really well, but he was saying last night that it's, you want to play. I mean, especially when you're in a groove and they're kind of pulling things together at this point. And for the Flames, they're chasing and jockeying for a playoff spot right now. They're in the second wild card spot in the Western Conference. And, it, you know, St. Louis has a few games at hand on in hand on them. So pretty much by the time they start playing, they might be out of a playoff spot. But it's just the way it is. You know, they're going to deal with it.
Kristen, as you just mentioned, the Flames are hanging on to that last wild card spot, 5 points ahead of the Jets with the same amount of games played. And I think you'd agree that the season for Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan, it didn't start like probably they expected and like the team expected. Is it safe to say that if those guys aren't playing at their highest capacity like they did 2 years ago when the Flames made the playoffs, that this team is going to be in tough to make the playoffs, and if they do make the playoffs, go far?
100%. It's their whole team is built around those guys. But the good news is for the Flames is that they've been getting contributions elsewhere in their lineup, which, you know, when, especially at the beginning of the year with Johnny Gaudreau, of course, he was out with that injury, broke his finger on November 15th and was out for a few weeks there. And then Sean Monahan had the start he did, which is expected when you sign a player. Sometimes they just too much expectations on their shoulders and they panic and or start not panic, but they, you know, start squeezing the stick a little bit, and there's a lot of pressure on them. The city certainly puts a lot of pressure and expectations on those two guys, and rightfully so. I mean, look at what they're getting paid and look how long they're getting paid for in Calgary. They're expected to be leaders and expected to lead the way, like much like Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews does in Chicago. So to have them start the way that they did, not great, but the good news is, for one of them at least, Sean Monahan has turned it around, especially in the past few weeks. He was on a nice little roll. He's approaching his 100th career goal. He's at 99 right now. He's been kept off the score sheet a couple of games here, but he's been playing well, and Johnny Gaudreau just hasn't looked like himself all year, I think. He did, you know, kind of, you saw some signs of him life, I guess, at the NHL All-Star game, and which kind of had Flames fans thinking, okay, here it goes, we're going to see the guy that we've seen for the past 2 years. Hasn't really happened yet, but the other thing too is these games are really going to start to matter, like you mentioned, and they're going to need those two guys and their contributions moving forward. They do have a nice piece in Matthew Tkachuk. I think they were a little bit surprised at the offense he's been able to put up in the NHL in his first year, but again, you need that top line to get going.
Kristen, I want to take you back last night in Pittsburgh. You know, Sidney Crosby approaching 1,000 points. You know, Glenn Gulletson saying, you know, we're aware he doesn't need to do it this evening. Could you kind of feel the buzz every time Crosby was on the ice, just in the Pittsburgh in the arena, pardon me, and just, you know, as he approaches such a sensational milestone?
For sure. It's, you just, especially in Pittsburgh, you realize how much of an impact he's had on that franchise. And every time he had the puck, I felt like things were going to happen for him. And if it wasn't for Chad Johnson playing lights out the way he did, it certainly could have gone a lot differently. Crosby's, I didn't even really know how good he's been against the Flames until it was, you know, kind of right in front of me. But against the Flames in his career, he's had 10 goals and 4 assists in 10 games in his career against the Flames. So that's pretty good. You expected it, half expected it to happen last night, him to get 3 points and hit 1,000, which is pretty incredible for what he's done in his career. And he's still so effective. But it's just, and that team is just so electrified when he's on the ice, and they feed off of it. And certainly I don't think they've taken a step or missed a beat since winning the Stanley Cup last spring. So it was, you know, I keep saying today that I was surprised that the Flames walked out of there with a win, just because of how good and how fast and how evolved the Pittsburgh Penguins are. But the Flames have been playing pretty good lately, and it's almost like they can't get up for games like that against, you know, the top teams in the league. They beat the Minnesota Wild right before they left on this three-game road trip, 5-1 at home, the best conference team in the West, and then they went on the road, didn't play great against New Jersey, and walked away with a win there. And they stuck with the New York Rangers on Sunday for pretty much the whole game until the third period, but just couldn't quite get it done in a 4-3 loss on Sunday. So they've proven all year that they can play against top teams in the NHL. Tuesday night was another example against Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins. But it's that consistency. It's they're still a young team, the Flames are. There's so many young pieces and so many guys that are, you know, on the cusp of their, just kind of scratching the surface of their NHL careers. So there's little baby steps and there's progress that the Flames are making right now. And I think Tuesday was a huge indicator of what they're capable of when they're playing their best.
Kristen Odland, our guest on NHL This Week. Kristen covers the Calgary Flames for the Calgary Herald. Kristen, here in Winnipeg, the city's been in a tizzy because Paul Maurice benched Patrick Laine for much of the second and third period. I'm sure the news filtered westwards all the way to Calgary. Meanwhile, in Calgary, you have another young player who himself has been actually a healthy scratch. That's Sam Bennett. He's been a healthy scratch a couple weeks back. You know, what was the reaction when Glenn Gullitson decided to sit down Bennett? And how do you think Bennett has responded since being made a healthy scratch?
Well, I was just going to say, heck, I wish I would have been healthy scratch early on in my career. I probably could have learned the thing or two, but it's no different. Like I make light of it, but it's for hockey players, it's the same thing. It's a learning experience. Sam Bennett is 20 years old, much like he's just on the beginning of his career and kind of the start. He's just scratching the surface, much like Patrick Laine. And I think it's shocking maybe in Laine's case, just because he was so unreal to start the season. But you can't expect they're kids, you can't expect them to be 100% perfect all the time and know what to do in every situation and know how to handle an 82-game season and how to be 100% every single night. It's just not going to happen, especially when you're playing against the best players in the world every night. In Sam Bennett's case, they're really committing to him at center. And that means that he's going to go up against Anze Kopitar. He's going to go up against Ryan Getzlaff and Ryan Kessler and guys that have played in the league for a long time and have had success and are big men, well-developed men. So I think Sam Bennett has responded positively. He was mad at first and rightfully so. I think, you know, if you look back in everybody's life when they were 20 years old and they're hell bent on, you know, making a career for themselves, and if somebody tells them to, you know, take a step back, it's you don't want to hear it, right? If you're a competitive person and most of the players to get to where they are in the NHL, you have to be a competitive, like an ultra-competitive guy. So he didn't take it probably well at first, but he's responded since then and maybe got to see the game from a different perspective. And just take a step back and take a breath and observe, and that's fine. And you look at a lot of the other, you know, really, really top-end players in the NHL, some of the best guys in the league, they've had to take, you know, they've been healthy scratch at times, probably early on in their careers too. So it's not uncommon And Glenn Gullitson, you know, said you can't have growth without adversity. He said that, you know, pretty much the day that he decided to scratch Sam Bennett. And I totally believe him. It's going to make him better in the long run. And when you're committing to a guy like Sam Bennett, like the Flames are at center, it's a process. Growth isn't, you know, it's kind of a up and down. But the other thing, too, is he's 20 years old. And he's got the Flames really believe in him and think the world of him. So it's a process.
Kristen, sticking with young players, Matthew Tkachuk, 18-year-old rookie for the Calgary Flames. He's fifth as far as rookie scoring leaders goes. He's got 34 points, 12 points behind Mitch Marner. Has he been the best surprise for the Calgary Flames this year?
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. He definitely surprised me. I thought in the back of my head that he has a chance to make this NHL club when the Flames drafted him sixth overall last year in Buffalo. Now, he was pretty much the one that said that he was going to make the team. Like, he told Brad Tree Living right away that he was, I'm going to make your club in the fall. And you don't want to put expectations on, especially a kid. You want to kind of not coddle them, of course, but you just want to make sure they're developing in the right way. You don't want to hinder their development. But every time Matthew Tkachuk got thrown a task or a challenge, he just rose to the occasion. He's been around the game his entire life. He's steeped in the game. Son of Keith Tkachuk, who has basically grown up around NHL players, grown up in a dressing room. He totally gets it. He fits in with his teammates, and Brad Treliving saw that right away. But he's also contributed. That's the thing that surprises me the most. It doesn't maybe surprise me that he's made this team, but it surprises me how fast he's been able to adapt and how much he's been able to contribute. And part of that, perhaps, is his line mates. He's playing on a pretty good line with, in terms of chemistry-wise, Michael Backlund and Michael Frolik. And both of those two guys are... I mean, obviously, Michael Frolik last year just had a great year despite the injuries, but he was, you know, one of the guys that you could look to every night to try his hardest. And then Michael Backlund has just come into his own, and he has a pile of confidence this season. So you have those two guys, and then that sort of wears off on a young kid like Matthew Tkachuk. And Matthew Tkachuk plays a special game. That game in front of the net is a tough one to play, especially for a young kid, but he doesn't seem to shy away from that play at all. Plays in the guts of the game. That's kind of one of Brad Treliving's words for him. And he's been able to score. I mean, he's been able to make plays that it's pretty incredible for a kid that age to jump into the NHL and do those things. Of course, it's the consistency that's the issue. And he went through a bit of that maybe at the beginning of the season, but it's been quite nice, actually, to have a line as consistent as Matthew Tkachuk, Michael Frolik, and Michael Backlund. They've been a really good trio for the Flames this year.
Kristen, I want to ask your thoughts on a player like Troy Brouwer. You know, we're approaching such a crucial portion of the season as, you know, teams try to hold down whatever playoff positioning they're in. And, you know, the Flames have had trouble getting into the dance years past, and a guy like Troy Brouwer, he's been down these stretches before on numerous teams, and he knows what it takes to, you know, really push the pace to push a team forward into the playoffs. I'm just curious your thoughts on what kind of experience he can provide to a young and developing team like the Flames.
It's excellent. Yeah, that's exactly why they got Troy Brouwer, is because of his experience. They signed him for 4 years at the start of free agency on July 1st in the summer. And he's been great for the young kids as well. He's excellent in the dressing room. He totally changed. He was one of the guys, him and Christopher Stieg, kind of changed the complex of the dressing room, which is a good thing. You needed a few more guys, older guys, to just sort of set the tone and the expectation. Christopher Stieg is another guy who's kind of on the same level. He's won two Stanley Cups and knows what it takes to get the job done, you know, when the games matter in the later portions of the season. I think it's been a frustrating year for Troy Brouwer. He also broke his finger. It was an unfortunate incident when Christopher Stieg was trying to clear the puck and accidentally hit him in the finger and right before Christmas. So he was out for a while with a broken finger and really hasn't contributed, I think, the way offensively, the way he's wanted to. But again, they signed Troy Brouwer for a lot of different reasons, and one of them is his play in the slot area. He's playing in front of the net. You can kind of see it sometimes when they play him in the on the power play unit. But also he's fit in really pretty well with Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan. I think most people it's a tough thing actually to have a guy play on with those two elite players. He's used to it. He's played with elite players pretty much all his life in St. Louis and in Washington. But I think this is the time, like you said, when things matter, when you want a guy like Troy Brouwer and Christopher Stieg in that dressing room to just kind of set the tone.
Kristen Odlin covers the Calgary Flames for the Calgary Herald. Kristen, really appreciate your time. Enjoy the bye week. Hopefully you get some time away from the rink for the next few days, and we'll do it again real soon.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Take care, Kristen. Thanks again. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll preview the Jets and the Blackhawks. We'll do a score update because that game is quickly coming to an end as they're in overtime. Much more to come. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Three shots on goal now for Chicago with the empty net. In is Scheifele from Kopp, and the Jets have the 5-3 lead.
That from, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, January 26th, right before the All-Star break, the last time the Blackhawks and the Jets met. That was another Jets victory as they made it four in a row over the Blackhawks. They go for five in a row. They go for the season sweep. Friday, they have the possibility of completing the season sweep against the Chicago Blackhawks after they already completed the season sweep against the St. Louis Blues. I don't think anybody would have predicted that. That from the last game back right before the All-Star break. The Jets and the Blackhawks Friday at MTS Center. Blackhawks just pulled off a victory seconds ago in Minnesota. They defeat the Wild 4-3 in overtime. Decent showing by the Minnesota Wild, I must say, given that the second half of a back-to-back situation. Then they came back. They were down. The Blackhawks just score on the power play in overtime. Captain Sirius, Jonathan Toews, I believe, is the one who deposits it through Darcy Kemper. Anyways, let's talk about the Jets and the Blackhawks come Friday night. Expectation is it's going to be Connor Hellebuyck, and that's simply because we don't expect Andrei Pavlik to be healthy. And Hellebuyck has had such great success against the Blackhawks. So expect Connor Hellebuyck. I don't know. This Jets team right now seems quite fragile. After the loss on Saturday against the Avalanche, after the loss last night against the Minnesota Wild, and I think the Blackhawks have pride. They certainly have pride, but I don't think they want to be swept, even though ultimately it probably won't matter because they're going to be finished, pretty close to atop the Central Division. I don't think they want to be swept by the Winnipeg Jets at season's end.
No, and I mean, we know that the Blackhawks, Drew, are still a top team in the Western Conference,
mm-hmm.
not just standings-wise, because obviously the Minnesota Wild are ahead of them in the standings, but clearly they defeated the Minnesota Wild tonight. And sure, the Minnesota Wild played last night, but I can't remember the last time any team was swept in their own division, never mind the Chicago Blackhawks, who have won three Stanley Cups in the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, look at are the Winnipeg Jets fragile right now? I mean, I think they're desperate. I think they are a little bit fragile, but certainly, you're 5 points behind the Flames for that last playoff spot. So we know that the Jets now, especially because they've lost the last two games, I mean, they have to get back into a winning rhythm. They have
sure.
to put together a winning streak here. Not only do they have to beat Chicago, Drew, but they have to beat Tampa mm-hmm. on Saturday, and they have to beat Dallas the following Tuesday. They have to win a lot of games here. We talked about it a couple weeks ago.
Well, we talked about it on Saturday.
Yep.
On Saturday's ISC show, we said there's eight games before the Jets have their bye week.
Yep.
and they needed to win six of those eight,
yep.
is what we said.
Yep.
Well, they've lost two. They've lost the first two of those eight. That inexcusable loss to the Colorado Avalanche on Saturday. The loss against the Wild, where, sure, you can argue that they played better, but any good that came out of that game only came after they were down 3-0, I would argue, and a lot of the drama that came out after that game regarding Patrick Laine and whatnot. So you're now in your situation where you really do, if you still want to be involved in the playoff conversation after your bye week, you need to really win your next six games.
Right, and when you talk about the Blackhawks, and we know how successful the Jets have been against the Chicago Blackhawks, I mean, when you're talking about taking the good parts of the game against the Minnesota Wild, and there were very many good parts in that game, the second period, the Jets were all over the Wild. And the Wild are a great team. I mean, when you talk about top four defensemen, mm-hmm. Ryan Suter, Jared Spurgeon, Matt Dumba, Marco Scandella, I mean, they probably are up there with almost any other team as far as the best top four defensemen in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
And then you throw in, you know, up the middle, now that they've added Eric Staal, you can throw in Mikko Koivu in there. But the Chicago Blackhawks team are still a force to be reckoned with, I believe. Do I have questions about their defense? Absolutely. I think Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook, Nicholas Jalmerson, they're a little bit older. They're not as dominant as they were 3 or 4 years ago, but we still know that they have very few weaknesses in their game. So, Drew, if you limit those turnovers, and if you think about it, if you take away that Patrick Laine turnover to Charlie Coyle, which resulted in Nino Niederreiter's goal, I mean, it's a tie game. So, I mean, this Jets team, I realize moral victories mean nothing. So you can't say, oh, well, we played really well and we peppered Devan Dubnyk with a lot of shots.
Right.
The reality is the Jets have to play pretty much mistake-free hockey because I think the Blackhawks are just hitting their stride right now.
I think the problem with expecting the Jets to play mistake-free hockey is they're just tired. I think that is an overwhelming factor at this point in time, is particularly on the back end. You have four defensemen who are playing, you know, 4/5 of the game.
Well, you know, Drew, Byfuglien should not be playing 31 minutes a game.
You know, the third pairing defense, Stewart and Postma, did not combined.
Right.
Did not play 15 minutes last night against the Minnesota Wild.
Right, Drew, and part of that is a function of not having Tyler Myers, a guy who usually plays 27 minutes. But
yeah, well,
hey, guys,
usually
Tyler Myers,
November.
Tyler Myers is not coming back anytime
soon.
Been
a factor in
I mean, he's not coming
time.
Back till April. So, I mean, they got to figure this out as a collective. I mean, the six defensemen that we saw against Minnesota is the same group of six defensemen we're going to see unless Ben Chiarot comes
back.
Well,
he had a full practice today.
Right.
So I would expect Chiarot, if he's healthy and available, to get back into the lineup.
It's still the top four,
of course,
right?
It's still the top four. I mean, this is – so, you know, when you're tired on the back end or you're tired as a forward, you are more susceptible to making mistakes when you're tired, when you're not as mentally sharp. And so I do cut, you know, some of the defensemen some slack because they're just getting driven into the ground by the general manager's refusal to do anything to shore up one of the worst bottom pairing defensive pairs in the entire NHL.
I agree with you. I mean, the Jets' depth on defense is not good. Look at Brian Strait was the big free agent acquisition. Brian Strait hasn't played a game in the NHL this year. So I agree with you, Drew. I mean, I would have liked for Chevy to pick up one or two, let's say, veteran depth defenseman.
Sure.
But that didn't happen. Well, I mean, Brian Strait obviously wasn't the answer.
No.
So, I mean, should the Jets make a move before the trade deadline to acquire a veteran defenseman?
The season's over. I mean, the season's over. They're not making the playoffs. Why, the fact that they'd be in the conversation now about acquiring a depth defenseman because, oh, well, now that we know Tyler Myers is out for the next 6 to 8 weeks, we need a depth right-side defenseman. Well, Tyler Myers has been out of your lineup since November. So, I mean, that's just craziness. Oh, well, now we discover we need a defenseman. Where have you guys been for the last 3 weeks?
Well, I think it's also something that you have to look at more long-term, right? And the expansion draft might take away a veteran defenseman. They might lose Tyler Myers. But the point is, Drew, they have to get better. So if that's via free agency or via trade, that's an area that's clearly not good enough right now for the Jets.
Well, they're counting, you know, Tucker Pullman. Does anybody really know if Tucker Pullman is the least bit ready to step into?
I've watched Tucker Pullman play twice, Drew, but yes, I agree. I mean, Are you going to expect Tucker Poolman to step into the NHL next year as a third-pairing defenseman?
It's asking a lot.
I would expect him to probably spend some time with the Moose before he plays for the Jets, but that also depends how he plays in training camp, right? So I agree with you. I'm not going to argue with you. Uh-huh. I mean, should the Jets go out in the offseason and get a veteran goaltender to push Connor Hellebuyck? Absolutely. Should they make a trade, maybe moving one of their young pieces, whether that's a Kyle Connor or Jack Roslovic, if they feel that's the right move to make their defense better? I think it's clear that this defense maybe isn't as good as we thought it was at the beginning of the year.
Let's go to break. Josh Cooper from Yahoo Sports joins us next. Probably going to talk a lot about The Bachelor. Ezzy, I hope you've been studying up on it because I haven't watched a freaking episode. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour number two of NHL This Week. It's not the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That comes Saturday at 9 a.m. This is NHL This Week. Drew Mundell, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend. He's with Yahoo Sports Puck Daddy. His name is Josh Cooper. Josh, good evening. What did you buy me at Nordstrom Rack?
A lot of freedom.
Freedom. Freedom. You can wear that freedom, can't you?
Yeah, you know, it doesn't cost. It costs more than $1.05 these days down here in the States. So, but yeah, no, I went to Nordstrom. It's a great store. I really enjoy it. I think that they make really smart fashion decisions, too.
And yes, about which suppliers they're going to carry and which suppliers they're not going to carry. That's particularly where you agree with their philosophy, right?
I mean, honestly, I just think it's a really good store, regardless of politics. I think it's a really, really good store that offers a lot. And I don't know if you guys have it in Canada or no. I'm trying to remember.
We don't have a Nordstrom Rack, but we've all made a visit to Nordstrom Rack once or twice in our lives as we venture down to the good old U.S. of A. to do some cross-border shopping.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, it's so cheap, which is awesome.
Yes.
So, I mean, I like it. But it's funny because I was actually going to go there tonight anyway. But I feel even better about buying there now.
Josh, is it true that you saw Sean Spicer at Nordstrom's Rack?
I did not. I did not. So that would be alternative news if it was.
Yeah, did you see Melissa McCarthy there, though? That's the real question now.
Yeah, that was a great impression. Oh, my God. It was just a tour de force of insanity and comedic genius and just the ability to take one person's essence and blow up all the things that are, I guess, parody and make it even funnier. I mean, it was, and I'm not the biggest Melissa McCarthy fan in the world, but she was amazing on that skit. And I mean, the show has done really well this year. They've had good guests. Their sketches have been good. And, you know, even beyond the politics stuff, to me, David S. Pumpkins will live in my lore as one of the greatest Halloween skits of all time on SNL.
There you go. Now, Josh, before we get into the hockey world, you and Ezzy will now banter about The Bachelor while I sit here and pretend to know what you're talking about. Please, give us an update on what's happening in, I don't know, what is this, season 48 of The Bachelor?
Yeah,
I'm not sure what.
Season 21, episode 7.
Season 21, episode 7. Okay.
Personally, I think that Nick is the only Bachelor that could take St. Thomas, the vacation destination, and make it horrible for a bunch of people, because I think he sent something like 6 of the contestants home on the last episode, and it was absolutely extraordinary. And I mean, it was but there was some editing snafus that I think was pointed out on Reality Steve, just in that they were playing a volleyball game. Everyone seemed to be having a good time, and then all of a sudden, all the women got really upset. And none of us could figure out why. It was just all of a sudden, just this wave of anger came over them.
And Corinne got pretty drunk, too.
Yeah, well, it must have been a day that ended with day in that regard.
See, Josh, this is my problem with the last episode. I missed the previous two episodes, and I've been texting and tweeting at you during this whole season. But, I mean, Nick, at the end of the episode, as you mentioned, this episode, for those who didn't watch, they went to the island of St. Thomas, and they had a bunch of two-on-one dates, which basically are two girls going out with Nick at once. And he eliminated both girls as opposed to one or none. And at the end of the episode, when there are only six women remaining, he has a complete breakdown and starts crying and doesn't know if he can finish the season.
So I don't know if I can finish the show looking at you giving me this play-by-play.
All right, now I'm into it.
It's a great season, yeah. Drew. You got to start watching.
Josh?
Well, I mean, it was certainly an episode where I think that a lot of people kind of scratched their heads afterwards and just kind of were asking what just happened, because we didn't get the sense that there was any mega drama. And then at the end of the end, and again, I mean, there's so much that happens that we don't know behind the scenes that it could have just been a difficult episode for the producers to edit in general. But yeah, I think Bachelor Nation, I think more than anything, wants to know what in the world happened in that volleyball game that set Nick off and the women off.
Yeah, the volleyball game. And also, I wanted to mention Christina's story about growing up in Russia, growing up in an orphanage, I thought was very touching.
She was a Russian orphan?
Yes.
Or what about, I guess it was a Jasmine, was that her name, with the doing the chokey on Nick?
Yeah.
What was up with that, man? I've been watching this show since Ben Flanick's season in the winter of 2012, and I got to say, there have been a lot of uncomfortable moments. That pretty much is very close to taking the cake for me, because not only did she try to choke The Bachelor, she also brought up this weird colloquialism I'd never heard of before called the chokey, I think it should be rule number one of going on this season, or going on any season of The Bachelor, not choke The Bachelor.
Not to choke The Bachelor seems like a very fair policy. Josh Cooper from Yahoo Sports joining us. We're going to shift the conversation to the world of hockey now, because I really can't take any more of this. Josh, have you recovered now from the All-Star game being held in your backyard there? I assume you had all the members of the media over for a barbecue or something along those lines as they invaded sunny California just a couple weeks ago.
Well, we didn't do that, but what we did is we had a really nice party at a restaurant called Big Wang's. It's a wing restaurant in downtown Los Angeles. Had a bunch of really cool people showed up, mingled with a lot of fans of Puck Daddy. It was a lot of fun. Really enjoyed that. To me, though, the greatest part of the whole weekend was on Friday night when they had the top 100 NHL players of all time, because to be around all those excellent, excellent hockey players and see them mingling with some of the best players in today's game. Because one of the things I thought was really nice about this All-Star game was that you didn't have a lot of guys pulling out. It was really just a good group of hockey players that were there, and a lot of star players, newsworthy players who were there. So to have all of these guys in one room, if you walk through the lobby of the JW Marriott, which is right next to Staples Center, which was kind of where I think home base was for a lot of the action, and just seeing, like Duncan Keith talking with Bobby Orr, or, Devin Dubnyk talking with Tony Esposito or something like that. I mean, it was really cool. And I thought that to me was the best part of the weekend. And then, I mean, one of the biggest issues I had with the weekend, though, was Saturday there was so much going on between the commissioner speaking, the celebrity game, the skills competition. It was hard to kind of figure out just everything that happened. So I think a lot of got lost there between, I mean, we were all there covering the commissioner, and then Justin Bieber got hit by Chris Pronger, and that just basically went to another level from a viral perspective, and then you're kind of chasing around that. So there was just too much going on Saturday, and then by the time Sunday came, I think that the game was fun. We were all ready for it to kind of be over, but to me, it was Friday was the best. They did such a great job, and I mean, one of the things, and I think I've written about this a few times, is them hiring Steve Mayer to kind of help with the celebrity kind of element, the entertainment element, is really starting to show a lot of promise. Because I mean, you look at the top 100 ceremony, you had John Hamm, an A-lister. And then, for me, just seeing John Legend, who is an epically good performer and one of the best out there right now. I mean, he sells out concerts, and he's also in the movie La La Land. To see him performing, I'm just like,
did he bring Chrissy
really
with him?
This right now?
Did he bring Chrissy Teigen with him?
I did not see Chrissy Teigen there, no. Okay. But still, it was. I mean, he's a major act, and I'm just remembering the days when the NHL had Shaka Khan at the NHL Awards, and you see, you know, Shaka Khan doing the Shaka Khan thing, and the players are just kind of staring aimlessly at the stage, just being like, "Wait, what?" So this was much different. It was really, really cool.
Josh, we have to get your opinion on the big news of the week. That's, of course, the Boston Bruins firing Claude Julien and naming Bruce Cassidy the interim head coach. What were your thoughts on that move, and where do you think this Bruins team is heading right now?
I think it's a move that was made by a general manager that hasn't really done a great job, that is kind of, I guess I want to say, a last resort. And also, you have an owner in Boston who is very old school as far as how he goes about his business. And I think personally that Don Sweeney, from what I could tell, tried to push this off as long as he could, because I think he knew that Claude Julien was a really good coach. And at the end of the day, everything led to him being fired, because, I mean, really, the general manager can't fire himself. He has to fire a coach. So, you know, I don't think it helps the Bruins. I don't think it may make them worse. I don't know really where they go from here, but I just feel like you have a lot of young players. You've got some decisions that were made by management that haven't really worked out very well. And you have a goaltending situation where if Tuukka Rask doesn't play, then the entire team falls apart. And I don't know if that's coaching. I don't know if that's what they have as far as backup between Zane McIntyre and Anton Khudobin, but there's just something that hasn't been right with the Bruins the last few years. And, you know, I think that it's sort of a weird situation because, again, I just don't know where they're going. They did get a lot of first-round picks a few years ago. They have some good players in their system and some good players who are coming up, but you know, I'm not really buying Don Sweeney's plan. I'm not really buying him as what he's done as a general manager, in part because I don't think he's a better GM than what they had before. So, I mean, to go from essentially Peter Chiarelli and Claude Julien to now Don Sweeney and Bruce Cassidy, I mean, that's a step back as an organization. And I think that's sort of how you have to look at it right now with the Bruins.
Josh, Marty Havlat officially retiring from the NHL. I'm just curious how you think he'll be remembered after 14 seasons in the National Hockey League.
He'll be remembered as a player who was very good, an excellent offensive player, but someone who, I just feel like we're still waiting for him to realize his potential. It was like he was almost always thrown in these trades as sort of the younger guy versus the guy that they were trading who could step in and maybe at some point produce offense. I mean, you know, our thoughts were that he'd be kind of another version of Marian Hossa when he was drafted and came to the league, and never seemed to quite get there. So, I mean, he was a good offensive player, but I think that, you know, there's a feeling of some unrealized potential with him. And, I mean, there was also issues with, you know, his playing time. I mean, just kind of some problems there, and, I mean, just kind of being vocal about that, or his agent being vocal about that. And you know, I think that it's kind of this, I don't want to say a star-crossed career, but I think we're always wanting more out of him. But he still has carved a really good career for himself. But I think that we always felt like there was more there for him to give just in general.
Josh, we'll let you go on this last question. The Arizona Coyotes, their prospective arena that was going to be on the campus of Arizona State University, seems to have fallen apart if it ever actually fully existed. What's the next option for the Coyotes? Are they still going to have to play in Glendale for the foreseeable future? Is this maybe the beginning of the end in Arizona? There's some reports out today that they're sniffing around Portland and Seattle.
Well, that was months ago, apparently, that had happened. So, I mean, they had already been, they were fatal. I mean, from what I've read, I mean, they were already moving forward with Arizona State, or at least coming near a deal, when they were looking in Portland and Seattle. I think those two areas make sense. But also, I mean, with Seattle, they don't have an arena. So I don't think that that really is very viable at the moment for them. And Portland, I mean, they have the Winterhawks, but I don't know if you have a market that can handle both an NBA and NHL team. I mean, you go from not having the NHL to suddenly having it, and it has to compete with the NBA in really a city that's not huge. Even though there are a lot of corporate sponsor dollars there, I think that that makes – I mean, that incentive is good, but I don't think what you're going to get right now in either of those markets is better than what they have in Arizona. And on top of that, one thing that seems to always get lost in this Coyotes talk is that the building that they're playing in Glendale is operated by AEG, which is the parent company of the Los Angeles Kings. So, I mean, really, as long as they want to play there, AEG is going to hook them up. And, you know, that there's really not a ton of urgency at the moment. I think the urgency is in the sense that the owners are losing some money. But as far as will they have a home in Arizona, no, I don't think that that's an issue at all. And in part because they were very, very lucky that AEG was the group that was selected to manage the arena there. But overall, I mean, I've been to Arizona a bunch. I think it does work as an NHL market. It's a huge market. There's a lot of money there. There's a lot of space there. I just think it has to deal with trying to figure out where you can build. And also, I mean, it's a kind of a screwy political situation there, too. I mean, I don't know how – again, I don't want to get too political with this, but
– bookending the interview with politics.
Yeah, but, I mean, there is a strong belief there, and, I mean, I don't really disagree with it, that the public shouldn't be financing that arena or their arenas. And, I mean, they take it a step further, though, with how they handle stuff. But overall, I think that – they should stay there. I think it's a market that could really do well hockey-wise. It's a great sports market, but it's just a matter of, I mean, it just seems like there's always drama at every turn until they get it figured out. Once they get it figured out, I truly believe, guys, it's going to be a great hockey market. They just have to get it figured out. And once they do, it'll be fine, but they just need to make that happen at some point.
Josh Cooper covers the NHL for Yahoo's Puck Daddy. Josh, before we let you go, our producer wants to know, are you a fan of just The Bachelor, or do you also watch Bachelorette?
Oh, I watch Bachelorette and Bachelor in Paradise, the entire series. And not just that, we've started to realize that Bachelor in Paradise may actually be the best of the three.
I see.
Because there's no sort of this fake, oh, you know, I'm in love, I'm not in love. It's just basically it's dumbing it down to its purest form, and it's so enjoyable to watch. And we've honestly gotten to the point, guys, where, like, I'm watching these shows, and I'm like, oh, wow, Corinne's going to be perfect on Paradise. I mean, it's like I can smell it. It's crazy.
By the way, Josh, we haven't even had time to get into Riverdale. I've watched the first two episodes.
What show?
Riverdale. It's the one's the spinoff of the Archie comics. God help me for knowing that.
Oh, you got to watch Riverdale, Josh.
I have to. I've actually never heard of this, but I will watch it for you guys.
I believe it's on the WB right after Dawson's Creek, but before Party of Five.
Oh, Dawson's Creek was so great.
Josh Cooper from Yahoo Sports. Joshua, thank you for this, buddy.
Okay, for my next time coming on, can my tune-in music be Sarah McLachlan? Because we just open that up with Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, absolutely. We can arrange that for you. No questions asked. You don't want to wait for your life to be over. Is that the one?
Yeah, I think that's the one. I think it's Sarah McLachlan. If it's not Sarah McLachlan, it's a Sarah McLachlan type that seems to populate the airwaves a lot during that era.
We'll let you research that between now and your next appearance, and you let us know, and we'll get our producer to get that hooked up for you.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Josh. Josh Cooper from Yahoo Sports. Up next, we'll talk about the Bruins firing Claude Julien. You're listening to NHL This Week. God have mercy on our souls on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
They have weaknesses in their lineup, just like most NHL teams, and they've eliminated the excuse, and that is Claude Julien, the head coach of the Boston Bruins. But I know this, you know, Claude Julien is a highly respected NHL head coach, and, you know, he's going to be out of work as long as he wants to be. And maybe he needs a bit of time to digest and all those things. But as I tweeted this morning, I don't think he's going to lose any sleep over this when he knew it was coming.
The fourth coaching change of the season made yesterday as the Boston Bruins relieve Claude Julien of his job as their head coach. The Bruins currently 1 point out of a playoff spot in the wild card race, 2 points behind the Toronto Maple Leafs in the Atlantic Division. The Bruins deciding to go separate ways from Claude Julien after 10 seasons and a Stanley Cup appearance, and I believe one other Stanley Cup finalist appearance as the head coach of the Boston Bruins. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment of the program brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Is there anybody in this room who thinks the Boston Bruins are better off without Claude Julien as their head coach and with Bruce Cassidy behind the bench, who apparently is not Butch Cassidy, but Bruce Cassidy? Anybody think that this is a good move for the Boston Bruins?
Yeah, so who would be the Sundance Kid? Would that be Pasternak or one of the younger players?
I would think the Sundance Kid might be, I don't know, would it be Don Sweeney in this analogy? I'm not sure.
I don't know, but
it's for torturing analogies today on the program.
Drew, I think you know how much I can't speak for Sean, but I'm a big fan of Claude Julien. And a lot of people, you know, say that Claude Julien is one of those quote-unquote old-school coaches, but
Is old school mean successful?
Exactly. And we know that he's part of that brain trust of Team Canada, right, with Mike Babcock and Ken Hitchcock. And it's kind of funny, guys, because this year is kind of turning into the year of the fired coach. And it's also been apparently the year of the troubled goaltender when you look at what's happening in St. Louis and Winnipeg and Dallas. But in Claude Julien, you mentioned it, Drew, they won the Cup in 2011. The Boston Bruins, if he's old school, then why do the Boston Bruins, for those analytics guys out there, have the best possession numbers in the entire NHL? Look, I didn't pick the Bruins to make the playoffs. Not that my predictions mean anything.
Yeah, they
but
clearly don't.
They don't. Nobody cares about my predictions.
No.
But you look at this Bruins team, and sure, you know you're still good up the middle with David Krejci and Patrice Bergeron, and you've got a lot of talent. David Backes, even though you know he has struggled at times offensively, you've got a lot of good players on this Bruins team. But you look at that defense, Zdeno Chara, Torrey Krug, Brandon Carlo's having a good rookie year. But is this team that good?
No.
Like, who expected the Boston Bruins to be a playoff contender this year, let alone a Stanley Cup contender? So I look at this team, and you mentioned, Drew, the Bruins are 2 points behind the Leafs, another team that wasn't expected to do much this year.
Sure.
I mean, we know that the Eastern Conference is the most competitive maybe it's ever been, certainly in the last 10 or so years.
Yeah.
So you look at what the Bruins are doing, they're right in the thick of the playoff race. Firing him, I think, is a mistake. But again, Dreg said it, we played his clip at the top of the segment. There was a clash between Don Sweeney and Claude Julien. He was in the last year of his contract. We knew it was coming eventually. I just expected it to be after the season.
Well, you know, when Don Sweeney was named general manager, he was never effusive in his praise for Claude Julien. Everything
right.
was about, well, he's our coach right now, and then he kept him along for a couple of years, but you never got the feeling that they were simpatico.
Well, Drew, you talked to Mick Colaggio about it, what, 3 weeks ago?
Longer than that. It was probably closer to
six weeks ago,
somewhere around that. And that was when, again, the rumors were swirling. And it wasn't the first time the rumors had been swirling. They were swirling last year, particularly when they missed the playoffs. They went on a tailspin. I think they lost 9 of their last 12 last year to miss the playoffs. And I believe it was 2 years ago where they missed the playoffs in the last day of the season as well. So it's not unreasonable that Claude Julien loses his job. But when you look at their roster, Sean, and you look at their, you know, where they are in their standings, I don't know anybody who says this team's really been underachieving. I think they've been achieving exactly what most people thought they would be.
They're almost a victim of their own success over the past years. I mean, there's such expectations in Boston, especially with the Red Sox and now the Patriots. Well, not now, but, you know, the Patriots. They just have this winning culture, and I guess if a team isn't making it into the postseason, then expectations, you know, the fans, they start to get testy, and maybe the organization feels that they need to compete with some of the other organizations within Massachusetts. And
Well, I mean, my question, you know, yeah, I'm sure, you know, I guess
interesting timing during the parade. I thought that was funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's something to be said for that, but I think there's also something to be said. Look, you know that you at the start of the year, nobody expected the Bruins are going to be a Stanley Cup contender. They just didn't have the talent. And so you have to look at their, you know, what are the expectations for the season? Mm-hmm. And is Claude Julien still sort of developing the players in a manner that they would want? Is he developing the young players? Are the young players improving under his watch?
True, that's a good point, because the a big criticism of Claude Julien over the last couple of years, even going back 3 or 4 years, has been that he's relied too much on the veterans.
Sure.
Guys like Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, this year David Backes, David Krejci. But you look at, you know, some of the younger players on this team, whether that's a David Pastrnak, a Ryan Spooner. We talked about Brandon Carlo. Mm-hmm. He's having a decent rookie year, but the point is, I mean, after Bergeron, Marchand, and some of the higher-end talent, I agree with you. I just don't think this team is that good. I'm not saying that they're a bad team. I'm just saying that when you look at some of the elite teams in the East, the Columbuses, the Pittsburghs, the Washingtons, the Rangers, Montreal, they're a mediocre team.
Yeah, but they're not underachieving. I mean, no. You wouldn't say that they're underachieving.
I think they're exactly where you thought they'd be.
You would say you look at the roster that Don Sweeney has provided to Claude Julien,
yeah,
and he's probably getting as much as you could expect to get out of that roster. I mean, David Pastrnak, who was their first-round pick back in 2014, is second on the team
in
points.
He's having a good year.
You'd be happy with his development. He's already over 20 goals this year. He's likely to be an easy 30 to maybe 35 goal scorer this season.
Andrew, look at some of the moves the Bruins have made, and I'm a big fan of David Backes, mm-hmm. but you could argue that, you know, he's towards the end of his career, and that was a slight overpay.
Sure.
But you look at the Riley Smith trade with Florida. Jimmy Hayes has not turned out. They thought he'd be a perennial 25-goal guy.
Does he have more than one goal yet this year?
He's been bad.
Yeah, he's got 2 goals now, pardon me. He's got 2 goals in 40 games, and yeah.
Right, and you look at some of the defensemen they've lost over the years. Sure. Have they replaced those defensemen? No. Johnny Boychuk is one of those defensemen. Seidenberg. Think of that team in 2011 and how deep they were. So I'm not saying that, you know, some of the players they have, like McQuaid and Kevin Miller, aren't good defensemen. Torrey Krug, I actually like as a defenseman. Does he struggle sometimes with larger forwards because he's a smaller defenseman? Yes. But the point is, has Don Sweeney given Claude Julien the tools to be a better team than they were last year? Remember, they were tied with Detroit last year for that last playoff spot.
Right.
And we just said it. I mean, they're 2 points behind Toronto right now. So
wait till next year. I mean, forget about this season. And if they make the playoffs, great. If they don't, you know, so be it, given the roster they had. Wait till next year when a guy like Charlie McAvoy might be on that team, or Jakub Zboril might be on that team, and then look at that defense. Don't you want Claude Julien teaching those guys, that defense, how to become, you know, proficient NHL defensemen? Not, you know, all due respect, Bruce Cassidy or whoever it is they hire as their next head coach. I mean, you're going to be hard-pressed from the Boston Bruins' point of view to hire a head coach who is as good as Claude Julien. And this decision by Don Sweeney just seems to be very short-sighted for, I'm not sure if it's his own ego. I mean, why he thought that this team was going to be any better than they currently are, I don't quite understand.
And the players are really taking it hard. I was listening to some of the interviews post occurrence of Claude Julien being fired, and Brad Marchand specifically, it was almost as if like his dad was fired from the team. He was saying that this happened because we didn't do our jobs, and it was all we. There was no direction of, you know, well, maybe he. It was all we. So I think the players are taking a lot of this on themselves.
Brad Marchand is, you know, he sometimes plays like a fool on the ice, but he's no fool. He knows, I'm sure, how much of his development and how much of his career he owes to Claude Julien. I mean, Marchand's a guy who was a third-round pick. You don't think that Claude Julien did a lot for Brad Marchand and got him somewhat under control? This is a guy who was totally out of control on the ice. And Claude Julien, I'm sure Brad Marchand gives Claude Julien a fair bit of the credit for turning him into a 40-goal scorer, getting him that contract that pays him more than $6 million a year. Brad Marchand knows that Claude Julien, that he's a better player because Claude Julien was his head coach for a lot of years.
And it's just going to be interesting, a point out of the playoffs going into this stretch right now. It's going to be really interesting to see how the Bruins respond to these occurrences.
I have trouble believing that they're going to be much better Bruce Cassidy than they currently have been under Claude Julien. In any event, something to watch. Julien won't be out of work for long. Certainly, number of teams, a lot of teams will certainly be interested in acquiring his services and to turn the keys over to him for their behind-the-bench needs.
Claude Julien should have just hopped on the parade. Should have just gone with the Patriots, hopped
him and
on.
Gronk, yeah, him and Gronk doing shotgun beers.
Yeah, with their teeth. He should have kept his shirt on, though.
You don't want to see Claude without a shirt on? Don't blame me there, necessarily. When we come back, Sidney Crosby is now 2 points away from 1,000. We talk about number 87. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
To one of the game's greatest players, you know, having won 2 Stanley Cups now, the World Cup of Hockey, 2 Olympic golds, it really is a remarkable accomplishment when you think of 1,000 points. And, you know, it's just another checklist on, you know, the road to the Hall of Fame at some point. And, you know, it's interesting that it comes not too long after Alexander Ovechkin also reached 1,000 points. It's something I think, you know, we should always give pause and reflect on that kind of greatness.
Scott Burnside of ESPN on our sister station in Edmonton, TSN 1260. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you here at TSN 1290 headquarters. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mamaro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Legal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mamaro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Calm.
Drew, I hope the Zappias are staying warm because I'm not looking forward to getting into my car after the show. It is absolutely freezing
frigid
outside right now.
Well, it is, you know, Winnipeg in February the 8th. So.
Yeah, but last week it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, maybe you were a little warm. Maybe you, you know, were wearing warmer clothes last week or something.
Yeah, I was wearing long underwear.
Ah, that'll do it.
Yeah,
yeah, always.
And thicker socks, wool.
Wool. Yeah. Wool is a good way to be.
Wool is a man's best friend in the winter.
It certainly will keep your feet warm.
Yeah.
Merino wool.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sheepskin, too. Sheepskin is very warm.
Yeah, you actually just wore a you just skinned a sheep and wore it, I believe is what
chinchilla
happened. Chinchilla. Chinchilla. Lovely. Yeah, you can never get enough chinchilla fur. Sidney Crosby got a point last night in Pittsburgh in their loss to the Calgary Flames. Now up to 998 in his legendary career, two away from that milestone of 1,000 points. You know, 1,000 points is one of those, you know, career benchmarks for a player. And Crosby is going to do it in game 700. Well, he's going to do it in game, you know, 754, maybe 755. Depends how many more games it takes him to get those last 2 points. I'd expect it to be done probably by the end of the weekend, given that he's Sidney Crosby and his point totals. I thought the best stat about it, you know, 1,000 points in 755 games is only the 12th fastest. If you look at the straight numbers, straight history, you know, of all the other players who've done it before. But when you dig a little bit deeper, and here's the exact quote from Frank Saravelli's article. His milestone is actually more impressive than that. When adjusting the other 11 players to the same goals per games period scored during Crosby's career, he is set to become the third fastest of all time to reach 1,000 points, behind only Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux. An average of 5.6 goals per game have been scored in Crosby's 12 NHL seasons, compared to the 7.9 goals per game average during the first half of Gretzky's career. You know, it wasn't that long ago that we were talking about Ovechkin getting his 1,000th point.
Yep.
Crosby's about to get it as well, and his manner in doing so is more impressive than Alex Ovechkin's, given his injuries and everything else, and how much quicker it actually would have been had he been healthy for, you know, and not had those concussion issues that cost him, you know, a year and a half of his career.
Yeah, it's unbelievable what Sidney Crosby has done in the last calendar year. Going back to 2016, the Penguins start off the season last year. They're pretty bad. Mike Sullivan takes over from Mike Johnston. The Penguins win the Cup, surprising everybody. Sidney Crosby wins the World Cup of Hockey, has a bit of a setback at the beginning of the season, misses six games, I think, six games, I think it was.
Yeah.
And now he is up there with Connor McDavid. I believe they're tied right now.
And he's played nine fewer games than Connor McDavid. So, you know, the McDavid show, it ain't the McDavid show yet. It's still the Crosby show.
Right. And I think now the question is, guys, well, how many points is Sidney Crosby going to end up with by the time his career is over? Because it's not going to be 2,900 or 2,800. It's not going to be Gretzky type of numbers, but it might be close to 2,000 by the time his career is over. So what else can you say? I think it's just a great time to be a hockey fan because you see what some of the young guys are doing. We mentioned Connor McDavid. You throw in Patrick Laine, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, but you forget that, you know, Sidney Crosby is almost 30 years old here, and he is still really, I think, playing at peak levels. I mean, he could win the scoring race this year. He could hit 100 points. So it's really incredible when you start looking at, you know, the fastest guys to reach 1,000 points. The fact that, you know, he's up there with names like Gretzky and Lemieux shows you that, you know, how good of a player this guy really is.
Absolutely, Ezzy. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, if he wants to play until he's 40 and he continues to play, I mean, he's going to have to play probably, I'd say, a dozen more years to be able to get to 2,000 points.
Yeah, which probably won't happen.
Probably won't happen because, you know, it's so...
Well, that's up to Crosby, though, as far as, you know, if he follows the Yarmer-Yager play-till-you're-45 plan.
But if he follows the Gretzky plan where at the first sort of sign of slippage, he decides to call it a career at that point in time. Maybe he's 36, maybe he's 37. He's had enough. Maybe he wins another couple cups. Who knows about his health at that point in time? Maybe when, you know, he's no longer the perennial points Art Ross winner in the league, he decides to dial it back a little bit. And only time will tell on that front. So when his career is over, the numbers themselves, the raw numbers, won't look as impressive. He won't be third, fourth, fifth in the NHL in terms of raw numbers. But when you adjust it and when you really take that sort of deeper look into his numbers, that's when you're going to really see the greatness exemplified. I mean, I think Ovechkin is going to finish probably, he might finish with more career points than Crosby. Maybe not, but it wouldn't surprise me. But it'll be interesting to look at the raw numbers when they both, you know, hang it up.
It's also important to look at who has helped Crosby along those lines get to these numbers. I mean, Sidney Crosby has been playing with a variety of line mates throughout his entire career. Not the highest of caliber players. I'm not taking anything away from, you know, Chris Kunitz, Pascal Dupuis, Colby Armstrong. You know, the list goes on.
Connor Sheary.
They're not Hall of Famers.
Brandon Rust, exactly. Like, he doesn't have Nicholas Backstrom working his way through the neutral zone and getting him the puck. Sidney Crosby does a lot of the heavy lifting on the Pittsburgh Penguins, and he earns a lot of those points, not from the perimeter, but from down low, grinding along the boards, the board play. That's what he was known for when he came into the league. No one could take the puck off him along the wall, you know, using his legs and his center of gravity to protect the puck and battle guys 40 pounds heavier than him along the wall. And it's just been such a pleasure to watch his vision as well. Just talking about it from a point perspective, shooting is one thing, but the way he can see the ice and distribute the puck, it's an absolutely incredible gift, and he operates at a level unlike anyone else. I can't remember the doctor's name. It's slipping my mind, but the guy who was in charge of his concussion recovery, he said that he's never seen a brain operate with regards to peripheral stimuli, so things that are happening around Sidney Crosby that he's picking up when his eyes are focused on one way. He said he's never seen a brain function faster than that of Sidney Crosby's that he's dealt with. So it just shows you how much computing and processing goes in, and he's just been such a cerebral player. It's been a tremendous honor to watch him do his thing.
Yeah, and Sean, to your point earlier about, you know, Sidney Crosby and how he does the heavy lifting for his teammates, I think that's what's going to separate Crosby, if it hasn't already, between Crosby and Ovechkin, and maybe Crosby and any other player aside from Wayne Gretzky, as far as why he is one of the best of all time, because not only does he make his teammates better, but he has the ability to have an effect on the game all around, on the defensive side of the puck, all over the ice, as you said, his playmaking ability. Now this year, you know, he's starting to put the puck in the net at a rate that we really haven't seen since the beginning of his career, but he is truly one of those special players, and I think by the time his career is over, I think we're going to be talking about him being the second best player of all time.
I think you're probably right about that. Certainly going to be up there and will be one of those bar conversations you have with a couple friends while tipping a few back.
Yeah, it's not going to be, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, nobody's going to touch Gretzky.
No.
But it's going to be, you know, who is the second best player of all time? Was it Crosby? Was it Lemieux? You can throw some other names in there, Messier, if you want. But, I mean, it's unbelievable, and I agree with Sean. I mean, I just think it's not even a discussion right now. I think he is the best player, and I don't even know if anybody's close.
One final segment coming up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
A very fitting top 10 list on TSN right now, the top 10 Sidney Crosby plays. So there you go. It's like they knew what we were talking about on the show, and then they coordinated the top 10 list to match us perfectly. It's very kind of them, isn't that?
We're all in this together, right?
The TSN family,
the
synergy, right? Radio and TV working hand in hand with one another. Welcome back to NHL This Week. One final segment on this Wednesday evening. A reminder, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday, 9 a.m. here on TSN 1290. We'll get you set for the Jets and the Lightning as the Jets will do battle. It's a second half of a back-to-back for the Jets.
You're doing pre and post that night.
I am doing pre and post that night. You're doing pre and post on the Friday night.
Yep.
So we would both. So Rick has to deal with you on Friday, with me on Saturday, and will likely resign his position on Sunday, I would imagine.
I recommend the pierogi pizza.
I'm not surprised you've had one of those. Do you have, like, my problem is, like, where do you, when do you find time to eat an entire pierogi pizza?
Well, I eat it on air.
Oh, okay. It's just, you.
Oh, you've never heard the crunching?
No,
you eat it during breaks, or you eat it, you know, in a box after you are, you know, done. Like, after,
thanks, Dr. Seuss.
No, but after.
Would you like it in a
just
box?
Continue.
Would you like it? Yeah. Would you eat it in a house? Would you like it with a mouse?
That's clever.
Thank you. I'm nothing if not clever. They're green eggs and ham. But anyways, Saturday 9 a.m. for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Selke race this year, wide open. Is he?
Yes. Well, you know, I wanted.
Who
I wanted
was it last year? Was it Andre Kopitar last year?
Yes, it was. Yeah. It was Andre Kopitar, and I thought, you know, it would be interesting for us to, you know, talk about it at the end of the show here, because,
well, I know Leafs fans are banging the drum for Nazem Kadri to be in the running for the Selke Trophy winner, which means that,
yeah, I don't know about that one, but yeah, well, he is a pretty good two way forward, but as far as his history with, let's just say some. Suspensions.
He's not overly popular.
Yeah,
right?
Let's just say that.
With the exception of Leafs fans, but they think that everybody they have is
He's
god-like.
Having a good year, though.
Yeah.
I've been critical of Nazem Kadri, but he is having a great year, as are other players, namely Austin Matthews
and
Mitch
Marner.
Well,
he doesn't have any pressure on him, which makes it a lot easier. He's sort of found that niche role now as the sort of third-line center there, and he can be that third-line center for the next. You know, would they sign to a 6-year contract extension in the
offseason? Something like that, 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, so that he can play that role and not have to worry about being the savior Nazem Kadri anymore. He can just be the third fiddle behind Austin Matthews' Nazem Kadri, which is probably a better role for him to play.
For me, the guy that stands out as someone who I'm kind of hoping for gets into the top three is a guy we just saw last night, Mikko Koivu. And he's a guy that I believe the highest he's ever been ranked, or I guess in the voting, is fourth, which was several years back, 2009, I believe. Mm-hmm. He's never been a finalist. But, I mean, when you're talking about the Selke, the names that you hear often as far as winning the trophy, Patrice Bergeron, Jonathan Taves, and you mentioned Andre Kopitar won it for the first time recently. But especially when you consider Kopitar hasn't had a very good offensive year. And Mikko Koivu is a guy, to me, we know he's been good in the faceoff circle for very many years, but this year he's having a great offensive year. I even think Mikko Koivu should be getting some Hart Trophy consideration when you look at how well the Wild have played. And he's their captain. He's their best player all around. They, of course, have other players that are contributing as well. But for me, Mikko Koivu has to be in that conversation. And another guy that I think is getting a little bit of attention, too, is Alexander Barkov. He's only 21 years old. He's a guy that has also missed some time this year. He's missed, I think, 15 games. So I don't know if he's going to end up being a finalist. But for me, Drew, when you consider that this is a trophy that has basically gone to one of Pavel Datsyuk, Patrice Bergeron, Jonathan Toews,
yeah,
over the last 10 years, there haven't been that many different winners. I think you might see a different winner this year.
It certainly might. I mean, some of the names you've mentioned, Mikko Koivu, Ryan Kessler is also being bandied about. He's having a very good year. Yeah, he's won before. He's having a very good year for the Anaheim Ducks, and, you know, on pace for about 65 points, which, you know, I think the Ducks will take that from Kessler at this point.
Yeah, Kessler is a good player that you bring up, Drew. He's a guy that we've seen countless times burn the Jets.
Yeah. I think the problem with the Selke Award, the voting on the Selke Award, not the problem necessarily, it's definitely the hardest award I would suggest to vote for, because it's not stats-based primarily. There's a lot of, I think, what you would describe as the eye test that goes into voting on the Selke Award. It's not, doesn't always show up. Truthfully, I've realized this. A lot of these guys who vote for these awards, a lot of these media members, they don't have the time to necessarily watch all of these players and all of their games, because they're so busy covering, oftentimes, the teams that they are paid to primarily cover. So if you're covering the Jets, or you're covering the Leafs, or you're covering the Flames, or you're covering the Wild, or you're covering the Blue Jackets, or you're covering the Blackhawks, 82 games a year, you don't have a ton of time to sit back and watch an Anaheim Ducks game when they play the Arizona Coyotes on a Tuesday night that starts at 10 o'clock Eastern time. So you don't necessarily get to see Ryan Kessler, or you don't get to, you know, when games are taking place at the same time as the team you're covering, you don't necessarily get to see it. So I think a lot of this voting, primarily for the Selke winner, is happening based on a groundswell of support and maybe a little bit of hearsay and a little bit of second and third hand knowledge about, boy, this player is playing terrific.
Yeah, you would hope that maybe some phone calls or some emails, text messages shot around to those who do cover the team, so that there is more than just, you know, the eye test and whatever random tweets you're reading or whatever. But I gotta go with Ryan Kessler this year. He's my pick. I love the Mikko Koivu pick, Ezzy. I think we saw him firsthand. He's a beast. He is the ultimate shutdown centerman. He's responsible defensively. But Ryan Kessler, he just brings that edge that can throw an opposition off their game. And he provides so much value for the Anaheim Ducks. He's having a great offensive season, like you were talking about, Drew. Takes big faceoffs. So does Mikko Koivu. He's also great in the draw. And I think he won it in Vancouver once, so he has done it before. He has been recognized for this accolade previously, and I think he's doing a bang-up job with the Ducks and deserves the rectification.
Kessler might be the favorite right now,
I think he is.
Yeah, and so I think it's one of those trophies, Drew, that, you know, doesn't get as much attention as the Hart Trophy or the Calder Trophy or the Vezina Trophy. I mean, it's probably like, it probably ranks fifth or sixth as far as trophies go.
If
the Norris Trophy.
If I recall correctly, Ezzy, sorry for interrupting you. If I recall correctly, going into the deep recesses of my mind, did you not win the BBYO floor hockey edition of the Selke Trophy back in the day?
That is way too long ago. You're talking about
you. I would have been
20 years ago.
Well, I would have been in grade 12, and I believe you would have been in grade 11 when we were playing in that floor hockey league.
15 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, more than 15 years ago, closer to 20. If I recall correctly, I thought you won the Selke version of that.
I usually play defense, but
no, I thought you were. Jeez, I don't know why I think that. It's one of those things that sticks in my mind for some odd reason.
Well, probably wasn't the Hart Trophy.
Well, I mean, you know, maybe Hart and Soul Trophy.
Because I also have, we have a friend, Hart, that won the Hart Trophy.
Because his name is Hart. Yeah. If we'd changed your name to Hart there, then we could have gone with that.
But you know what I mean, Drew? It's one of those trophies.
Go back and look at your mantle. Maybe you have a trophy on there.
There have been other members of the media that have pushed for a defensive defenseman trophy. And I think that's another trophy, because we know the Norris Trophy is really the offensive defenseman trophy.
Yeah.
That's why Erik Karlsson wins it every year, even though Drew Doughty is the best defenseman in the game. So I just think the Selke Trophy, you know, that race is interesting.
I'd be also okay if the media weren't necessarily voting for any of these awards. If it was more the coaches and the general managers who are voting for these players. Because honest to God, I mean, it's true. I mean, these guys don't necessarily watch as many games as you might think. And it's not a criticism. It's just a reality of there's only so many hours in the day, and you can only dedicate so much time to watching hockey besides the specific games you're paid to watch, that it doesn't leave you much of an opportunity to watch everything else unless you're, you know, staying up till 5 in the morning every night, catching up on every West Coast Central Time Zone East Coast game that's happening at the same time as the other games you're watching.
And we'll know if Ryan Kesler isn't a finalist, then we'll know that some people haven't been watching him play.
Well, I mean, it was a little bit, I don't know if you guys saw the clip. Mark Scheifele was doing an interview with some other place, let's say. By other place, I mean a different network. And they asked him about his line mates, and they had the complete wrong line mates. And Scheifele goes, great research, guys.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And I felt bad. I mean, it was obviously one of those things that happens sometimes in the course, but it was a little embarrassing because, you know, you bring on this guy, he gives you the time, and you're setting him up with this question about, you know, why have you been playing so great with Ehlers and Line A? And this is after he had stopped playing with them. He was playing with Kopp and Wheeler at that point in time, and it'd been a few weeks at that point, and it was a little bit awkward, I would say, at that point in time. So, but as they say, bleep happens, right? That's it for this Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. Big thanks to Josh Cooper and Kristen Oatland for joining us. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Keener Jerseys, Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, Linden Market Dental Center, and Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. You can follow us on Twitter at illegalcurve, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is illegalcurve.com. Big props to producer Rory doing the great job behind the board.
Rory!
For Sean Asor and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. And until Saturday morning at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.